welcome back to Naturalistic Support. I'm Arnell Doré, and joining me on the air today is our co-host, Elaine Durbach. Hi, Elaine.
Hi, Arnell.
Good to have you back. Naturalistic Support is a unique approach to lasting personal growth and healthier, more satisfying relationships. On Naturalistic Support, we help each other, combining a progressive understanding of our human experience with non-hierarchical peer support. So that involves you calling us to talk about yourselves as well as to talk to each other. Our number is 212-209-2877. And just as we did on the day prior to Thanksgiving last year, today we'll look at how we might bridge the communication gap. In a little more than 24 hours from now, families all over America are going to gather together, and in many cases, it will mean sitting across or even right next to someone whose take on our country and where we're headed is diametrically opposed to yours. The way that some families deal with the problem is by imposing a prohibition against all political and a lot of cultural discussion. But is prohibition the only way to avoid the ugliness of pompous pontification, blistering sarcasm, and lingering resentment? There are many good reasons for families to have political discussions, if possible. When they're done well, political discussions during holiday dinners can enrich relationships, inspire growth, and connect family members through meaningful dialogue. And by encouraging respectful and thoughtful exchanges, families can turn these conversations into opportunities for learning and bonding and making the holiday gathering more memorable and impactful. And for younger attendees, rather than teaching them avoidance, a respectful dinner discussion can be an excellent way to model effective and engaging communication. While steering clear of controversy may be the only viable option for some, today we're going to consider how people who deeply disagree might still speak to one another in a manner that builds trust, respect, and understanding. If you've ever found an effective way to bridge the communication gap, call us at 212-209-2877 and tell us about it.
I think this is such an amazing goal that you're setting for us and our listeners.
Yeah, I mean, the alternative
just making
is
people aware of the challenge.
Yeah.
To not respond spontaneously, but to actually be mindful like this.
Yeah. Yeah, to walk in with a little bit of strategy, how you're going to navigate these waters, because they are rough waters.
Yeah, I think the part of what happens is that knee-jerk reaction.
Yeah, but you know, at the same time, as we said, avoidance has a cost. You know, how many get-togethers are you going to spend avoiding talking to people about stuff you care about?
Yeah. As you say, if what you encounter straight away strikes you as ignorance or fear and hatred, you're going to have a very quick response unless you're forewarned.
Yeah, and that's probably the most difficult gap to bridge of all. You know, beliefs that come, as you say, from ignorance, fear, and hatred. And, you know, when we encounter things like racism and homophobia, misogyny, transphobia, xenophobia, or witness attacks on other marginalized groups, you know, we're probably encountering these really deep-seated attitudes, and those are highly resistant to change. You know, when we respond to that kind of attitude, when we encounter it, it's important to be clear with yourself about what's your goal. You know, are you really hoping to change someone's mind, or is your intent more about punishing the offender with ridicule and embarrassment? I think some people have that latter goal. What do you think, Elaine?
Yeah, I wonder if it's because when you, you know, when you encounter those attitudes that seem so hateful, there's a, even when it's not directed at you, there's a defensive reaction that becomes aggressive.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's understandable to be incensed at hearing ignorant bigotry. It's a frustrating thing, and it's perfectly understandable. We actually have a caller on the line, our first caller, so let's take that. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling, and where are you calling from?
Yeah, good afternoon. How you doing?
Yeah.
Calling from Jamaica, Queens.
Yeah, hey, I'm sorry. I didn't catch your name. From Jamaica, Queens?
Ed, we've talked before.
Ed. Okay, good. Good to have you back on, Ed. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think?
Well, my family has been, they've got some real opposing views. And, well, two things. Number one, I don't take things that seriously, especially during this time of year, because I know emotions and feelings get involved and people tend to react and overreact. I used to try to avoid discussing politics, but you can't have some meaningful discussion if you keep an open mind. But the main thing that I've learned to avoid is the social lubricant, because that tends to make everything more intense.
The social lubricant, you mean talking about culture? Talking about...
We're talking about intoxicated.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Alcohol. Talking about alcohol. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah.
When you're drunk, you shouldn't talk.
Yeah.
Politics or religion or anybody, because you have no control over your emotions.
That's true.
And you avoid that helps a lot. Because usually around this time of year, everybody wants to bend their wrist a little bit and get a little tight. And then you have the greatest ideas when you're intoxicated.
Yeah, well, your inhibitions are lowered, and who knows what's going to come out. You're certainly right about that, Ed.
Yeah, and don't take things too seriously. I mean, it's life, you know. Everybody's got an opinion. So I just learn to let it slide. You know, we're talking. The main thing about this time of year is family, togetherness, reminiscing, and trying to build some memories for the future. Because before you know it, everybody's gone.
Yeah, I mean. So let me ask you this: Do you ever do you ever really struggle over a topic with some of the people gathered? Have you ever actually gone into it?
Oh yeah, I mean it happens. Like I've told you before, as I get older, I don't know, I find I mellow more. So when I was younger, I was very opinionated. I was, the angry young man, and everything I saw was right, and I knew everything. But as time goes on and you develop a sense of perspective, you got to be open-minded. You know, we're all just human beings.
Yeah.
And there's no point in getting in an argument, especially around this time of year. This doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, you got a healthy attitude there, Ed. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I think that's a great example
for
the young people.
Thank you for calling,
and
have a good holiday.
You too. Enjoy the holidays.
Okay, my friend. Yeah, that's great. I like what Ed had to say about that.
Yeah, that's the kind of elder you want at the table.
Absolutely. He brings some wisdom, and he's lived a very dynamic, experienced life. So, yeah, I appreciate him contributing. You know, if you really want to inspire someone to examine their bigoted attitudes, it's a tall order. But if we could apply a naturalistic humanism approach, that can help you at least plant a seed in the other person that might eventually help them grow. Elaine, maybe you could read a little bit about
how
we go forward with a naturalistic humanist perspective.
I like this approach so much. I mean, individuals who say things that are bigoted and offensive are only the proximate expression of a far deeper structural problem, the legacy of domination culture and its institutions. And the bigotry that needs to be understood is not emanating from them, but from a system from which they need to be freed. Obviously, they don't think they need to be freed, but if we see them that way, I think we have a leg up on this.
Yeah.
So instead of scolding or criticizing, we might try to imagine that we're offering them an opportunity for, you know, somebody who's less aware to maybe mature and grow beyond their current limitations. Hopefully they don't know we're doing that.
Yeah.
So the conversation should try to bridge, no matter how slightly, the chasm between you and the other person. And if these are your intentions, the person being addressed is likely to sense it. And if they're sufficiently emotionally healthy, they'll welcome your effort. A less healthy person, however, may be more defensive and less responsive, and you have to be more subtle about it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, society is changing quickly. You know, we're becoming, everywhere, we're becoming more diverse and more inclusive. And clearly, you know, diversity is the key to what makes America great. But increasing diversity also means that sooner or later, all of us are likely to encounter situations where we speak or behave in a way that might be hurtful to another, even if that wasn't our intent to begin with. And if you're fortunate enough to have had experiences that made you sufficiently aware and sensitive that you don't make those kind of mistakes, you don't make microaggressive comments, and you don't behave in bigoted ways, well, that's wonderful that you've gotten to that place. But from a naturalistic humanist perspective, ridiculing others who don't share your good fortune is unfair.
Yeah, it's kind of counter to your teaching as well, that, you know, that if you understand where people are coming from, you're much less likely to ridicule them.
Yeah. Why don't you continue, Elaine?
Sure. One of your key ideas in naturalistic humanism is that given all that has led us to a given moment, we're all doing our best and being the healthiest that we can be. And were you to have the other person's determinants, you'd probably behave exactly the way they do. And as we always try to emphasize here, there are no good or bad people, just people with different circumstances. And this understanding has many implications for how we should attempt to raise awareness and sensitivity in others. I think you're also encouraging a curiosity, an interest in where they're coming from, as opposed to dismissing them.
Yeah, absolutely. Callers, when you encounter a person who seems bigoted, how do you respond? Have you ever found a way to talk to someone like that? And how did it turn out? Was it constructive? Did you get somewhere where you felt the communication was heard? Or did things quickly fly off the rails? Our number is 212-209-2877. We'd like to hear about your experiences dealing with people who are coming from a very different place than you. I mean, is the only alternative that you can employ avoidance? Or is there a way to take the rough ride through the rough waters and maybe get to the other side?
Yeah, as you say, if you can censor yourself that little bit, or be self-aware enough to avoid the judgmental language and to communicate in as descriptive a manner as possible. It might help them listen to you, hear what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to start calling someone names.
Yeah, you're setting a tough challenge here to not try and win an argument, but to bring someone just a little further along the journey, away from domination culture.
Yeah, I mean, you know, because if you walk into these things and you have a sufficient macro understanding of the forces that are acting upon each and every person who's present at that gathering, you recognize, you know, there's tremendous force keeping people in this domination culture headspace. And if you're not in that headspace, you just need to look around you and recognize, okay, everyone here is coming from that place. You know, who can I talk to, or how can I talk in a way that is respectful, but at the same time can maybe open up the conversation a little bit. We've got another caller or two on the line, Elaine. So let's take that. Why don't you take that, Elaine?
Sure. Hi, this is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling, and where are you calling from?
De La Rome, from Puy.
Yeah. Hey.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that.
You asked.
Having a hard time hearing you. Are you on a speakerphone, or we're having a tough time hearing you?
How's this?
Oh, that's much better.
Much better.
Okay, so you asked if I've ever experienced a bigoted person or something like that. It happened to me twice. The first time was in Florida. I was dumbfounded. I mean, it's crazy when it hits you in the face like that. This guy literally said that New York needs to get nuked.
Oh, God.
Oh, my gosh.
Because of the diversity. And you know, that's literally what he said. And then another guy in Virginia, we weren't pals, but, you know, we spoke every day. We lived in the same apartment complex, the same house. And we saw each other every day, so we had no choice but to interact. And he got to the point where he told me that black people and white people are not supposed to mate because they're of a different species.
Oh, boy.
And then he I guess he was putting emphasis on the point by saying, you don't see a beluga whale mating with a killer whale. They're different species.
So how did you deal with this person?
Yeah.
I didn't, you know, I couldn't help but think, you know, how stupid are you? You know, I didn't say it, obviously. I didn't deal with what he said, even though he did. I feel like I was slapped in the face. I'm not black myself, and I'm not white either. But still, you know, it's crazy that someone can think that black people and white people are two different species and they cannot mate.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, there's no, I don't think that there's any limit to how weird people have opinions out there, but at the same time, you know, the challenge for us is, what do you do, right? What do you do when you encounter that? It sounds like, so did you just kind of like ignore those comments? And like, what was your relationship with that person?
Well, really none. I mean, it was just that we lived in the same house, and he was on the first floor and I was on the second floor.
Okay.
Can I ask you a question? After the conversation, when you weren't face to face with him, did you think of other answers you wish you'd said?
Now I think I would have reacted differently, not violently, but But I'm not much older. I'm about 13 years older. But, you know, 13 years can teach you a thing
yeah.
or two. And I think I would say something different, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe I try to figure out how he got to this opinion, you know?
Yeah.
And open up dialogue that way.
Yeah, but, how long have you felt this way? What makes, you know, what brought you to believe this? Sure, those are good questions to ask.
I don't know, I guess older age, I don't know. And I've always thought that racism was bigotry, racism, whatever it's called, it's all terrible. You know, yeah. Negative.
Yeah, but you know, we need to understand it in terms of the larger system, because it's very handy if you happen to be elite and you want to keep control and you want to take attention away from you. Racism is a really handy distraction. You know, it works for the powerful. If it didn't work for the powerful, believe me, they're powerful enough that they could wipe out racism tomorrow. But it works for them, so instead they perpetuate it. Say your name again, because I didn't hear it at the beginning.
Oh, Selalom.
Selalom.
Yes.
Okay.
You're remarkably self-controlled and polite. I think I'd have had a harder time not kind of snorting in disgust at this person.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And the guy in Florida, the one that said that New York needs to get nuked.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I was actually at a camping trip, and I got angry for some reason with my family, and I just went out to drive, and I stumbled into a bar that was frequented by apparently a lot of racist people, because the bartender, she was kind of nice to me, and a guy walked in, and this is the guy that says that New York needs to get nuked. He said it no sooner than I said that I was from New York. And
he was looking for a fight.
I don't know, maybe. But I feel really good about the outcome of this, because I asked the lady, you know, what if you think that guy would like to play a game of pool? And she
wow.
was like, you know, I don't think you should try, you know, something of that nature.
Yeah.
But she was like, you know what? What the hell? I'm going to get the, give me the quarters. I gave her $2, whatever it was. And I asked him, you want to play a game of pool? And he said yes. And it was kind of like not a nice yes, but kind of like, you know, like, screw you, yeah, I'll play a game. You know what I mean? It was strange.
Yeah, right. Like he was taking your dare or something.
Oh, no. He actually meant to say, yes, he played the game.
Yeah, and how did it go?
We were talking, and, you know, like I said, as soon as, like, we were, you know, regular, you know, where you, I'm from New York, I'm here on vacation, whatever, in the end, he very, hesitantly, you know, gave me a pound, like a closed fist handshake.
Yeah.
You know, and it almost like, wow, I think I might have impressed this guy.
Yep.
And he got to know me, and he understands now that people are not what he thinks.
Yeah, maybe he would call
Excellent.
You before he sent the nuke to New York. Say, get out of there,
Selalom.
Yeah, like,
get out of there. It's on the way. Yeah, exactly.
Selalom, thank you so much for the call. Really appreciate the story and the call, and hope you have a good holiday tomorrow.
Thank you. That's exactly
how you want people to.
Yeah, call
to
us
behave.
Again. And I think we might have another caller on the line here. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling and where are you calling from?
Hello?
Hi. Who's calling?
Hi, this is Erin. How are you?
Good, Erin. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Far Rockaway.
Far Rockaway, okay. That's far. Have you encountered family gatherings where you were trying to be heard or dealing with people whose attitudes were very different than your own?
Not so much in, like, you know, like a really bad way, but, you know, I just consider life is an experience, and you know, it's always a learning, a time for learning, no matter where you are and whatever kind of people you and you tend to be around.
Yeah, but if you could just talk up a little louder, so we could hear you. But
I think that we're just going through a universal identity crisis right now that's been brought on by, you know, generations of people telling us who to be, what color you are. Oh, you're black or you're white, without us even being able to figure it out for ourselves, with us, you know, answer those questions. You know, we're just being told those things. And so, you know, it just seems like something that we need to figure out for ourselves and answer those questions before we can tell us somebody, you know, tell somebody else who we are. Like, you know, I know a lot of people, like, when they introduce themselves, like, I'm a doctor, I'm a cook, or I'm a chef, or whatever, instead of actually saying that, you know, the one thing that we are all is human, a human being, they tell us the things that, you know, other labels that have been put onto them, you know,
yeah.
I like to cook, or I like to help people, you know, instead of us being nouns, we should be verbs, you know what I mean? Just kind of not being stuck in something finite as a label that puts us in a box, and we're kind of just stuck there, you know?
Yep.
And it's kind of hard to get out of it, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, labels serve a big purpose in society, and they aren't necessarily a healthy purpose. You know, it does keep people where they are more than it, I think, helps people go where they might want to go. So, yeah.
Erin, what are you expecting tomorrow? What's the atmosphere like at your family's Thanksgiving dinners?
Not really a whole lot, because I think that's something else too that's been kind of put upon us. So I don't really celebrate those kinds of things. You know, because you know, as you evolve, you kind of learn the story behind things. So celebrating things like that is just, I don't know.
You'd rather avoid it?
Do you have any family gathering during the year that you go to, or do you not?
Yeah, but you know, those things you can do on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
You know, just because, you know, not because, you know, everybody says you have to do it, or a certain shopping day, or, you know, it just seems kind of disingenuous.
Yeah, all right. Doesn't have to be on a Thursday. You're right.
Do you prefer to kind of gather with people that you want to be with?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Erin, thank you so much for the call, and call us again.
We're at the halfway mark already.
Yeah, we're at the halfway mark, so we should take a quick break, and our number is 212-209-2877. We're talking about bridging the communication gap on a day that sometimes you're really challenged to communicate in a way that's peaceful and harmonious. And how have you done it, if you've done it? Or what do you anticipate tomorrow is going to be like? 212-209-2877.
Little girl, why are you so sad? It's almost time for Christmas.
My family doesn't celebrate Christmas.
Oh, Jewish?
Uh-uh.
Muslim?
Uh-uh.
Buddhist?
Nope. My family doesn't practice any religion, and we don't believe in things that are supernatural.
But haven't they heard? There are many ways to enjoy and celebrate Christmas that are completely naturalistic.
Really?
Really! And this Christmas, they can learn all about having a perfectly wonderful naturalistic Christmas on Equal Time for Free Thoughts Naturalistic Christmas Special.
Naturalistic Christmas Special?
That's right!
When?
From 3 to 5 on Christmas Day.
3 to 5 Christmas Day!
Right here on 99.5 WBAI.
Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Naturalistic Support. We're talking about dealing with family, friends, strangers who we might encounter during the holiday dinner tomorrow or at some other time, and how we deal with it if we encounter someone who's coming from a very different place. And I think we have another caller on the line. Elaine, why don't you take that caller?
Sure. Hi, this is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling, and where are you calling from?
Happy Elaine, and happy Thanksgiving. Arnell, this is Attila from Long Island.
Hi,
hey, Attila.
Hey.
Happy Thanksgiving to you.
I'll make it quick because I'm running late for an appointment. So I'll just make my point, and I will just hang up quick. I do a couple of different things. I try to avoid trigger words, meaning, like the teacher and me, I assess the person who's next to me. I say, what do I know that will they like? What won't they like as far as the words or even mannerisms? And I just try to act like as if they just met me. Because we're all usually kind of enamored with meeting someone for the first time. And so that often will throw off the reactive mind. And I'll also try to avoid topics that I know they may not want to talk about. And that's pretty much it, you know?
Yeah. So that sounds like a very good recipe.
Yeah, that sounds safe.
Thank you. I'm going to go.
Okay, thanks,
Attila. Enjoy.
Okay. And we have another call online. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling and where are you calling from?
Hi. My name is Samuel Jackson.
Hey.
When I run into those type of situations, I want to know where did your great, 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 great grandmother come from. If you can answer that, the bigoted goes right out the window.
Yeah. I hear that. That's that's a good point. That, you know, we all come from someplace else, someplace so different. I mean, you know, that's a great point, Samuel. Because the the generations really change. People change over generations, and young people today have more in common with each other than they do with their grandparents. You know, so when people say, "Well, I'm this culture, I'm that culture," you're much more engaged with the culture of your peers than anything else. You know, all people get tattoos today. All people listen to rap music today. I mean, there are things that they have a lot more in common with each other than they do with their own older family members.
Yes, my point is that everybody in this world, I don't care where you come from or who you think you are, where you think you came from, everybody in this world is African. Everybody, because life began in one place. And that was in Africa.
Yeah.
And everybody that transferred from Africa into different places, they're Africans. I don't care what color you are, what tint your hair or your eyes are, you're an African.
Yeah, I mean, look, if we want to go back far enough time, there was a time that Africa was physically connected to what is now separate continents, right? There was a time that...
That has to do with a separate continent. Nobody else was born anywhere else other than Africa. I don't care anywhere you want to put it. People was only born in Africa.
Yes, for sure. All of our fossils say show that.
It makes everybody in this world, Japanese, Chinese, Korea, anybody else, they are African.
Yep.
And I'm going to let that go and let you think about it.
Samuel, have you pointed that out to people at the dinner table in the past?
I think Samuel has moved on, so that's okay.
Ah.
Thanks
I'm
for that call, Samuel.
That's a good line of discussion.
Yeah, probably. We have another caller on the line here. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from?
Hi. My name is Mary. I'm calling from the Princeton area, Kendall Park, New Jersey.
Hey, Mary. Yes, tell us what's on your mind.
Well, I wanted to just mention something that's been really helpful to me, and becoming exciting and involved with it more. There's a community of folks that have group meetings called Focusing Oriented Community Empowerment Group.
Okay.
And our purpose is to learn over time how to really listen and be in the service of the communication or the dialogue, even though, we have lots of differences. So over time, because we videotape these conversations and they're on a private, website where we can view ourselves,
mm-hmm.
it's really been a change agent in my life. So I just wanted to hold that up as a resource. And
Focusing Oriented Community Empowerment Group.
Yeah.
Huh, interesting. And so it sounds like you guys are building communication skills.
It's no one is screened to be in the group. And it started 9 years ago. I guess I've been involved for about 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just people who are interested, like some of us do community work, some of us are therapists, and some of us just have an interest in different cultures and are from different parts of the world.
So has it helped you deal with people that you encounter in other parts of your life that might be coming from a very different place?
Absolutely. It's a great interest of mine, and really I say that it's my heart, because I'm from the oldest in the Louisiana Purchase, and I chose to move to New York City when I was 25.
Mm.
So I'm always bridging, my family's in two parts of the country, and they're as different as you would expect.
Yeah, so do you want to just tell us, like, how you deal with the difference? I mean, what kind of things do you do?
Well, family's a little different than the group. In the group, we're all considered facilitators and participants, so that there's this...
Right. Well, let's not talk about the group, because, I mean, that's kind of like special rules, and it sounds like everybody is working on listening to each other in a way that in normal life we don't have that luxury. So
I will absolutely get back to my family, but I just want to point out that one of the challenges is that the group does not have any rules, but we've evolved over time, and it has not been easy. So with my family, I just lead with, honoring the relationship first, and I'm always a bit of an outsider. I cannot say that I have overcome that dynamic, but I certainly have introduced them to many people that they've come to love that they would never meet. My friends who are Jewish and Muslim and from different parts of the world, in their lifetime, but they've actually come to know and love folks are a big part of my life.
That's great that you were able to do that and they were able to be responsive. That's beautiful, Mary.
Yes. Sometimes I would be headed down south a little bit afraid, and it would work out.
All right.
I can imagine. It must be quite challenging.
Yeah, you've got to be brave. But it's great. It sounds like it's paid off.
Definitely.
Mary, thank you for your call, and call us again.
Thank you for your show. Take care.
All right. Good holiday to you. Yeah, that's very nice.
It's really good to know that people are working along these lines, but it's got to be challenging when you take that kind of development in yourself and take it home to the family.
Yeah, well,
but it sounds like it's benefited the family too.
Yeah, I mean, Mary seems to have taken all of this a much further step by actually bringing in people who are very different than her family and introducing them and hoping for the best. And it sounds like the best occurred, which is great. Yeah. You know, when we communicate with, if we try to communicate with someone with bigoted attitudes, as we were saying, judgmental language has to be avoided. Communicating in as descriptive a way as possible will improve the chances of being heard and understood. And the goal shouldn't be to win an argument, but just to maybe bring them a little further on the journey away from domination culture. So characterizations like, you know, sweeping generalization or characterizations are also a problem. Like, you're always disrespectful whenever you talk about Hispanic people. Or you're a homophobe, you know. Those things are communication killers.
What do you mean by descriptive? What is that?
Yeah, descriptive would be, first of all, if you're upset with what someone's saying, you could describe how it makes you feel.
Ah, okay.
Right, you could describe that. You could, you know, or if you're trying to say, look, this belief that you have is actually damaging for you and damaging to others, and for these reasons, it's damaging because it's preventing you from maybe having some pleasure in life, connecting to someone different. That, like, for example, that Mary's family members have gotten to have through Mary's efforts, that is denied someone who's, you know, bigotry does damage to others, but it does damage to ourselves. And if we could kind of talk about the damaging effects, that's one set of descriptions. Another set of descriptions has to do with what feelings and emotional state it puts us in to hear someone we care about espouse those views. So, yeah,
you know,
description
as our
versus
first caller
judgment.
Mentioned, you know, that playing a game of billiards, snooker, whatever he played with a guy who thought
pool,
that a New Yorker
pool.
Would be
yeah.
With pool. That a New Yorker would be, you know, somebody less human, and obviously came away from it finding that this person from New York was actually courteous and sociable.
Yeah. I'm sure that was a growth experience for that person, and probably for our caller as well, you know, because every time that you bridge a gap like that, I mean, it's kind of amazing that he invited that guy to play pool. I mean, it's
fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, we're getting some interesting stories about incredible bravery, and and that's really, you know, what we need to move away from this domination culture that keeps us all captive.
I think you're touching on exactly what the challenge is, like tomorrow at these dinners, to not feel threatened and to know that somebody else's limitations are not going to hurt you, and that you can treat them as if they are worthy of respect.
Yeah, and you know, there's this idea that if you a general technique for communicating with people that you disagree, one would include assuming a good intention in the other person.
Exactly.
You know, not assuming that the other person is looking to do damage or have these hurtful attitudes. No, they're trying to do the best they can. They're, you know, they might be angry about something or hurt about something or grieved about something, but in order to hear them, in order to get past it, you have to hear them. And in order to hear them, you have to not get into the judgmental thinking and the name-calling and all that stuff. You know, treating someone who said hurtful things with kindness and delicacy might be really hard, but it's the only way to avoid the other person becoming defensive and kind of believing that they are the truly aggrieved party who's being treated unfairly.
Yeah, I think that we're almost always defensive before we're aggressive. We think that we're endangered. And if we feel safe, we're much more likely to treat the other person with openness.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, being socially marginalized is really something that gets everybody's hackles up because it's deeply threatening. You know, evolutionarily, if you were socially ostracized or marginalized, it could mean very, very harmful things for you, including death.
Yeah, it was dangerous.
Yeah.
It still feels dangerous.
Right. So, you know, social pain actually, you know, neuroscience gives us a great amount of information about what our brain does when we experience social isolation or being insulted socially. The same areas of our brain that register physical pain seem to register that social experience. So it cuts deep when we lash out at someone. Another thing we can do to have a good outcome comes from Marshall Rosenberg's work. Have you ever heard of nonviolent communication?
Yeah. Can you? What does it entail?
So, it involves being descriptive, as we do with naturalistic support, steering clear of judgmental thinking and language. So it's all that in common with naturalistic support. But it's also trying to observe your own emotions and recognize what you're going through and try to recognize the, you know, and name in your mind what the other party is going through and figuring out what you need and then making the request and say, here's what I need from you. You know, here's what would make me feel better.
Yeah, which is allowing a certain vulnerability on your own part.
Yeah. Making a request of the other person and inviting them to consider and express their request of you could be tremendous in helping a discussion progress. And, you know, so there are lots of resources also online that can help us deal with people who are very different than us. But it's not easy. And, you know, tomorrow it's going to be challenging for a lot of people. But I think it's totally worthwhile. Right?
Oh, boy, you're making me very grateful for the family that I belong to.
Yeah.
Because I think these are super challenging situations.
Yeah. You're meeting at a halfway point, right, with your brother-in-law?
Yes, we're going to meet at a Chinese restaurant.
Yeah.
That the people that I'm meeting with, for the most part, we're in agreement with each other. I think we're going to have to actually dig quite deep to find where we differ.
Yeah, well, that could be interesting, too. I mean, that could be an interesting line of communication. So we basically have to wrap it up, Elaine.
We had a lot of callers.
Yeah,
we did. I think a lot of people with strong feelings about this.
Absolutely.
You've been listening to Naturalistic Support. I'm Arnell Doré.
And I'm Elaine Durbach.
Thanks to our talented engineer, Red Johnson, and to Hilla Weiss for her support. Tune in again next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for another edition of our program. Archived editions of Naturalistic Support can be found on our website at wbai.org and at equaltimeforfreethought.org. Hi to my foster mom, Marilyn, And stay where you are, because coming right up is the Katie Halper Show. And remember, always try to be kind, because you never really know what someone else is going through.